I need this for the back room. Is that it? And Will, where did you go? Will, what's the best way to do this? If I just put it down?
Yes.
Can people hear me? Yes, it's okay. And I can have a pretty loud voice. Yes. So good morning, good morning. It's very nice to see all of you here. It's a lovely day. It's the Sunday before Thanksgiving. Of course, we all know that. So that's, I think of Thanksgiving in this very naive way, like, oh, it's this simple holiday that hasn't been grabbed by shopping frenzy or anything like that. And then I think about it, oh my gosh, all that food shopping, all that preparation, all that coordination of transportation and people and whose home is everybody going to, or which church that opens their doors to everyone and has a, you know, community potluck. And what about the grandparents in the nursing home? Do you pick them up or do you go have Thanksgiving there? What about people in the hospital? What about our friends in the military or in jail? It's like really complicated. One of my morning students with the practice period came in one morning and we check in and he said, we got to him and he said, you know, like, how is your week going and all that? And he said, well, you got people, you got problems. And he's right. And he's right. He's absolutely right. So where I live in Maine, a lot of people like myself are from away. That's what we're called. We're from away. We're not people. We're just from away. And many of us are there without any family members. So when holidays come, we kind of gather together, each other's house or sometimes a restaurant, and we've started going to the churches that open their doors and sit at long tables with. We don't know who the people are. We don't know their circumstances, but we're sharing this wonderful opportunity. And that's exactly what it is. So no matter how different it is from when you were a child, going to your grandparents' home or even your great-grandparents' home, and then in your parents' home, and then your home, and then your children's home, and pretty soon I'll be going to my grandchildren's home, everything changes. But no matter how different it is, we are celebrating the nourishing of ourselves and each other. That's what Thanksgiving is about. We are grateful for food and for coming together wherever, with whoever, to share this amazing gift of the universe. So, a couple of Sundays ago, Marty gave this very wonderful lecture about the four vows. And he used Shohaku Okamura's book, Living by Vow, A Practical Introduction to Eight Essential Chants and Texts. And I was so excited to see that in this book, one of the essential Zen chants and texts is the meal chant. And we say the meal chant here when we are in formal silent retreat, Sashin, and it's part of the Orioki, which is the formal partaking of food. And it's a very long and involved chant. It begins with setting up the zendo for Orioki. It begins with unwrapping the bowls. It continues through formal serving the food, formal receiving the food, formal bringing in the hot water to clean the bowls, formal wrapping them up again. And even it's involved with the very last part, which is the coordination of the doshi using the clapping boards, the little clapping sticks, with the head server in the hall, with the head cook right outside the kitchen. It is a beautiful ceremony, absolutely lovely. It's like a ballet. It's like you're watching and you're partaking in a ballet. It's gorgeous, and right in the middle of that long, intricate, complicated chant are the five contemplations. And that's what I want to talk with you today about. The five contemplations are about receiving food. It's about taking the mindful presence off of the cushion, actually, even though you're still on the cushion in Oryoki, and bringing it into daily life. So people here who have done Oryoki might not know which part of the chant is the five contemplations, because it's not labeled that. But in his book, he separates it out. And I've come into contact with Thich Nhat Hanh's version of the five contemplations, which are, as you know, Thich Nhat Hanh is the Vietnamese monk, teacher, and prolific poet. And he has translated them in not only his poetic style, but I think with a tenderness in his heart for Westerners, trying to understand this language. So here's the formal one that we say in the meal chant that happens during Oryoki. And I think I'll read Thich Nhat Hanh's translation right back to back. So the first one is, we reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. And I remember the first time I heard it, it was just beautiful, but I thought to myself, how does it come to us? And Thich Nhat Hanh's first contemplation is, this food is a gift of the whole universe, the earth, the sky, numerous living beings, and much hard work. So he answered my question. The second one, Tim had a very funny response to this one. We reflect on our virtue and practice and whether we are worthy of this offering. And in San Francisco Zen Center, the first time he heard this, he just gulped and he thought, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. And he didn't eat. And he didn't eat for months in Oryoki. He just, you know, so Thich Nhat Hanh's translation of that second contemplation is, may we eat with mindfulness and gratitude so as to be worthy to receive it. Oh, there you go. I can do that. I can do that. The third one, we regard greed as the obstacle to freedom of mind. There's millions of years of study that can go into that and practice. And Thich Nhat Hanh's translation of the third contemplation is, may we recognize and transform unskillful states of mind, especially greed. Another million or so years to work on that. The fourth one, we regard this meal as medicine to sustain our life. That's pretty clear. That one's pretty clear. And Thich Nhat Hanh's translation is, may we take only foods that nourish us and keep us healthy. And that always brings me up short. Like I'm sitting there with a bowl of Cheetos or something like that. Maybe warmed up for supper. So that one is very precious, precious for me. And the fifth one, for the sake of enlightenment, we now receive this food. And Thich Nhat Hanh's is, we accept this food to realize the path of understanding and love and to nourish our ideal of serving all beings. And in this food, I see clearly the entire universe supporting my existence. That last sentence really pierces my heart. So, those are the five contemplations. So, I want to talk a little bit about food as a practice, food as a teaching, food as a dharma. So Dogen, the founder of the Soto School of Japanese Zen, comments often in his writings of the significance of making and taking food. So, and as we know, all actions in our daily life, all actions can and might as well be spiritual practice. So preparing food mindfully is spiritual practice. Many cooks know that. And partaking in food mindfully
is a spiritual practice. Phoebe, you're having great fun with that one. some of us cooks maybe don't know about spiritual practice in cooking. So according to Dogen, and Katagiri said this all the time, he used to say it all the time, practice itself is enlightenment. Practice itself is enlightenment. Practice itself is enlightenment. So practice means completely being just here, just in this moment, fully, just in this moment, right now. That's what practice is. That's what enlightenment is. When we are mindful, right here, right now, our body and our mind completely present in just this moment, engaged in what we are doing, we are awake. We are enlightened. In Mahayana Buddhism, what the school of Zen is in, there's no discrimination between good times and hard times, between delusion and enlightenment, between samsara and nirvana. There's no distinction between simple and grand. There's no distinction between giver, receiver, and gift. There's no distinction. Buddha means awakened one, enlightened. And again, awakening is not some special state. It's not any stage of development. When we are one with all beings, we are awake. And all beings are present in everything all the time. All the time. Indra's net, many of us have heard of Indra's net, is the image used to compare the universe to a cosmic net strung with jewels, such that in each jewel can be seen the reflection of every other jewel, reflecting each other into an infinite series, meaning the nature of the entire universe is contained in each particle. Another way of saying all beings are present in everything. So Dogen also says, everything we encounter is the Buddha's life. Everything. Everything is entirely the Dharma world. Nothing is outside of the Dharma world. Dharma means teaching. Everything is a teaching. Everything. Food is a teaching. Everything in our daily life is an opportunity to practice being just here, being with just this. So when we eat, we just eat. The five contemplations are said before we eat to help us focus and just be right there with that. So, do we experience food as Dharma? Do we experience food as a teaching? I actually think food is the easiest place to see the teaching, which is the interconnectedness of all beings. I think it's this simple. Absolutely. So, well, here we have an example. So the first contemplation, this food is a gift of the whole universe. Here we have an organic Minnesota's own Honeycrisp, fresh from Lund, still cold. So Thich Nhat Hanh says that if you are a poet, you can see the cloud in this apple. And we're all poets, of course. So without the cloud, there's no rain, and without the rain, there's no apple. Without the sun, there's no apple or anything else. And without the atmosphere, there's no apple or anything else. Without the earth, there's no apple. Without the tree, there's no apple. Without the person who planted the tree, there's no apple. Without the parents of the person who planted the tree, there's no apple. This goes on like Indra's net. Everything is connected. Without the harvester, the person who picked this apple, we don't have an apple. And depending on how far away this was grown, without the truck and the truck driver and the fuel and the people who made the truck and the parents of the truck driver, we have no apple. And then where did it come? Pim Lund opened Lund's how many years ago? Without a grocery store, without a person working in the grocery store, without a way to get to the grocery store, we have no apple. So this apple is actually made of all non-apple elements. So in this apple, we can see the interconnectedness of everything and the emptiness. No abiding self in this apple. What a teaching! What a teaching! So, this food is a gift of the whole universe. The earth, the sky, numerous living beings, and much hard work. That's just the first contemplation. The second contemplation. May we eat with mindfulness and gratitude. Ah, there's a practice for it. So, we often eat while reading. We eat while watching television. We eat while we're on the computer. We eat while we're on all kinds of devices. We eat while we're on the phone. Sometimes I even call a friend who's also having supper so we can have supper together on the phone and chat a little bit. We eat and talk a lot because of really good things, family meals, at home, in restaurants, meeting people for coffee or snacks or whatever. So talking is a pretty common thing that we do while we're eating. So I actually was having a conversation in the kitchen a couple of weeks ago while I was eating with a Dharma friend here, and he said he couldn't eat without reading because the pain of loneliness was too acute. So he had started a practice, and the practice was non-reading. Well, his practice was non-reading. So he did that for a while. And then a couple weeks later, he said that he had changed it to mindful eating instead of non-reading. And he said it really made a difference. It really made a difference to be engaged with his food, engaged with what he was doing. And the loneliness wasn't so bad, he said. And I was thinking to myself, when I'm really drawn to eating with the TV on or while reading, it's exactly the same. It's because of the loneliness I don't want to feel. So I ask myself, if I focus on the first contemplation, this food is a gift of the whole universe, the earth, the sky, numerous living beings, and much hard work, would I still feel lonely? So when I say that contemplation, I am much more connected to nature, to the farmer, to earth, to the tree, to the person who harvested it, to the person who delivered it. If I cook the apple in applesauce, then I can include my stove, the person who delivers the gas, the pot I'm cooking it in, the people who made the pot, the person who gave me the pot as a gift, and I actually don't feel lonely then. I am so connected with everything. With everything. So, I have a friend who meditates He's an organic gardener, a wonderful organic gardener, and he's a fine Finnish carpenter. So he spends a fair amount of time in silence. And he came to a mindfulness day retreat with me, and he had never eaten in silence before, didn't know what was going to be happening, he'd never heard the chant before. So the day involved silent sitting, silent walking, singing, a lecture, silent eating, and this meal chant. And then at the end, the teacher who offered that asks people just for a comment or two about the experience. And he said he was blown away by the power of some 60 to 70 people in one room, all at these long tables, eating in silence. Eating in silence. He said it was deafening. The silence. The silence was deafening. It was huge and expansive. And I know of some folks who are starting to eat one meal a week or maybe a month in silence with the TV off, the radio off, the computers off, the devices off, and not answering the phone. One meal. And they say it just affects everybody so much. And it's the people I know doing this, many of them are families, and it really affects them. So may we eat with mindfulness and gratitude so as to be worthy to receive this gift. So the third one. Ah, yummy. May we recognize and transform unskillful states of mind, especially greed. We've been doing the whole practice period on anger. And this, there's a trio, greed, anger, and ignorance, that are just powerhouses of delusion. So, let's look at greed. Very interesting thing in our culture, greed. It's a bit institutionalized. When consumption is part of the national, the gross national product, and also sometimes thought of as being patriotic by consuming a lot. So how much do I need? How much do I need? And I asked it in a different way to myself, like, what do I need? Or what is enough? And the word what seemed a little wobbly to me, a little loose. What do I want? I want it all. You know, what is enough? Everything is enough. So using the word how much seems to have just a little shape to it, just a little bit of a container. And you know, the First Nation people had quite an understanding of this, quite a relationship with how much do I need. And they took what they needed and left the rest for all the other beings that they knew they were interconnected with. So what's interesting in Orioki, and those of you who have done this formal practice, is lots of questions come up about this when the food is served. The servers come in with these large steaming bowls of something, and they bow in front of you, and we bow, and they kneel in front, and we hand them a bowl. And it's like I ask myself, okay, how hungry am I? And then I wonder what this is. Do I recognize it? Will I like it? You know? Oh, there's this classic line in Zen monasteries, which is, all the Tenzos know this line. Tenzos are the head cook. If you see something you don't like in a meal, eat a lot of it. It's not going to get better. So, there is the server. Here is my bowl. There is the container. How much is enough? And how many people need to eat still after me? And the servers and the cooks eat last. And nothing is held back in the kitchen. All the food goes into these bowls that come into the zendo and are offered. So that's a, it's a, I can't say, a, I don't want to say a complicated question, but it's a rich, how much is enough, is a really rich question. And according to Garrison Keillor, my true, true brother, if Al's Pretty Good Grocery doesn't have it, you don't need it. And I like that. I like that a lot. So, the fourth one. This is pretty straightforward. May we take only foods that nourish us and keep us healthy. This one really woke me up. It was like, it changed completely how mindfully and carefully and thoughtfully I feed myself. What I buy, how I prepare it. I was stunned. I was just amazed that one little sentence could help me so much nourish myself better. And it also affected how I purchase, what I purchase and how I purchase food. Because for me to be healthy, the ecosystem has to be healthy. And I am so pleased and blessed, and I don't want to make you feel jealous or anything, but in Maine, I have to talk about it a little bit. In Maine, we have the highest percentage per capita of new young farmers in the whole country. And their farms are organic, sustainable, and diversified. And we have an organization called the Maine Farmland Trust that purchases and also encourages existing farmers to put their land in trust so that it is saved. And I heard something on NPR recently, a discussion about this, how farmland gets sold as subdivisions, and a farmer can't buy it and pay that mortgage off by farming. So this land is being put into trust so that young farmers, any age farmer, can buy this, and it really supports their being able to have sustainable, diversified, organic farms. So I could say it's easy for me to support healthy ecosystem and thereby be supporting myself to be healthy. I'm very, very lucky. I'm very lucky. So the fifth one. We accept this food to realize the path of love and understanding and to nurture our ideal of serving all beings. Now that can go right before the four vows that we say at the end of every little talk and announcement. The four bodhisattva vows, because that's what it's about. And the last one, it may sound like a sixth contemplation, but it's really attached to the end of that fifth one. And this one was added by one of Thich Nhat Hanh's monasteries, I think the West Coast one, Deer Park Monastery. And I think it works as a very nice little wrap-up. And it is, in this food, we see clearly the entire universe supporting our existence. And that shot through me like a spear and just shattered my delusion about separateness. It just took it out. It just took it out completely. Sometimes, through the day, I just say that. I just say that. And it kind of snaps me out of my, poor me. So, it truly, truly, it's wonderful. Because I believe it. I believe that statement. I do entirely see the universe completely supporting my existence. Completely. This. In this food, we see clearly the entire universe supporting our existence. I heard somewhere once, let's see, I've got it written down so I can get it right. Where is it? I don't see it. It's supposed to be right here, so I'll try and just do it. It takes the entire universe cooperating for anything at all to happen. Huh. That's interesting. Completely. So, I am so grateful for these five contemplations. In retreats at Thich Nhat Hanh's monasteries, I go to the Blue Cliff Monastery in New York State. They say this, Thich Nhat Hanh's translation, before every meal. So three times a day, you get to say this. And so then when I come home, I do it for quite a while after. And as you know, retreats are one thing, and bringing the practice home, it has this little dwindling that can happen. But whenever I say it, whenever I remember it, it just totally supports me completely. So that's my Thanksgiving gift to all of you to take with you. It's printed on your programs. And finishing up preparing this talk, it came into my mind that you can use this format for other things in our life. And I was somehow, the grumbling I do about maintaining my little sweet house in Maine came to mind. So I wrote one for my little sweet house in Maine. And here it is. This sweet little house is a gift of the whole universe. The earth, the sky, numerous living beings, and much hard work. Ah! May I maintain it with mindfulness and gratitude so as to be worthy to live in it. I'd never thought of that before. I'd never thought of it in this context before. Because I do grumble quite a bit. May I recognize and transform unskillful states of mind, especially greed. I have remodeled and added on to this house three times, and I've got one more planned. It's like, how much is enough? How much is enough? And may I use only sustainable products in maintenance. That's a real dedication, because there's a lot of unsustainable products. Easy to get, cheaper, all of that. So that one has a staff in it, you know, kind of. So then, I accept this sweet little house and all its care to realize the path of understanding and love and to nourish my ideal of serving all beings. That's interesting. That's interesting. And in this sweet little house, I see clearly the entire universe supporting my existence. And I said this last night, I started to cry. I thought, oh no. So maybe it's time to turn east and go home. Pretty soon, Rosemary, you think? Not till Tuesday morning.
Don't go.
Thank you. So there's also a very short verse of the five contemplations, and I'm thinking of it as like a snack verse. It is really cute, and I can see this ball of Cheetos. And that goes like, but it's very to the point. It is very to the point. Earth, air, fire, and water combined to make this food. Numberless beings have labored and died that I may eat. May I be nourished that I may nourish life. I didn't write that one down. I'm so sorry. I can write it down for you, though. So, thank you. I believe that's what I have to say, but I would love it if we could all chant it together. It's in your programs. I hope there was enough programs for everyone. Share if you can. Is there enough to share in the back?
Here. Just more.
Some more?
Wow. How much is enough?
How much is enough? Thank you, Pamela. So I will hold up the Honeycrisp as a focal point. This food is a gift of the whole universe, the earth, the sky, numerous living beings, and much hard work. May we eat with mindfulness and gratitude so as to be worthy to receive it. May we recognize and transform unskillful states of mind, especially greed. May we take only foods that nourish us and keep us healthy. May we accept this food to realize the path of understanding and love, and to nourish our ideal of serving all beings. In this food, we see clearly the entire universe supporting our existence. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Rosemary, do we want or need to do questions?
We need to do questions and answers and comments.
We need to do questions and answers and comments, says the assistant guiding teacher. So, yes.
I actually have a comment. I appreciate the talk this morning very much. A while ago, I was making pumpkin bread, and I was roasting my pumpkin, and I thought, who thought to make bread out of this pumpkin? Who thought to even eat this squash?
Yeah.
And now, after your talk, I was like, it just expanded the whole thing beyond who thought to do it, but the growth, the harvest, the trip. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. That's beautiful. I saw another hand. Yes.
Okay. I especially related to the idea of gratitude, and I think you talk about, I can't remember in which, the apple and all the people who have helped us. And this kind of sparked an idea of how the earth actually exists without us, also really well. And the universe, we really are not a big team, right? Is the universe grateful for us, I would think.
Well, there is some discussion in some, you know, circles that we are a very integral part in the universe, like everything is. Maybe we're not fully expressing what's possible there. No, but thank you.
Can you express it again?
Oh, I... Who is it? Brian Swim, the mathematical cosmologist? He expresses it very well. You could look him up on the web. Yeah. And you were shaking your head with someone once. I thought it was you. No? Okay. Okay. Any other comments? Stories? Yes, you have the best story.
Getting back to the apple and how it arrived here. So part of that process is the label that's on the apple, mm-hmm. and the plastics industry that produced the label, mm-hmm. and the toxin that went into the environment as part of that process.
Yes.
And the owners of those industries,
yes.
some of whom funded the Tea Party.
Yes.
So many thanks.
Many thanks. It includes all of that. Yes.
Yeah.
Many beings include all of that. The Dharma world is all of that.
And you are what we eat.
And we are what we eat.
Don't eat the label.
Or the Cheetos.
Yeah. Yes.
And also what you're saying makes me think about what you said,
other than organic food is cheaper. But if you have this expansive idea, if you have this this sensibility that says to look at everything, then indeed it's not cheaper. It's much, much, much more expensive in so many ways to not eat organic food.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
But of course, we're embedded in this world that is supporting the organic food movement. So the organic food movement is dependent on the rest of the universe. So we can say it's, yeah, cheaper in some sort of limited sense, but we're all together. We're all connected. You know what I'm saying? It's like we can't abstract. I think we can't remove ourselves and say, I'm choosing organic, and therefore I'm less blameful or less responsible. I mean, it's all a process and we're all involved in it. Mm-hmm. And we can try and make skillful choices. We can try.
Yes, we can. We make choices all the time. And we can make choices. And but the extra thing would be to be proudful about it or look down on those who don't. You know, so it's a mindful practice, the choices we make. And who knows if the choices someone else is making aren't just as mindful with other criteria and other situations than the freedom I have to make the choice for local, organic, sustainable. Wow, that's quite a privileged place to be. And I should be very grateful for that. A friend of mine, this is just a beautiful idea. A friend of mine who goes to Haiti often to help in whatever way people here can help there. And she's doing some things with water filtration. And she was so excited the first time she went. She's this bubbly person. And she showed up, and this is all through a parish that she's involved with. And she showed up, and the priest there who greeted her said, "Now the first thing we have to remember, we come from such wealth to go into a country that's been so devastated by so much." He said, "The first thing we have to remember, if we have something to give or if we can help, is to apologize and she said it really caught her up short. And then when she thought about it, it's that does make sense, and it puts a helper on a level with the helped, so that they're more equal. The first thing to do, if we have more than someone else, and we can give some of it, is to apologize that we have more. That just opened up my heart so much. So much. And quieted some little in me. You know, it's really... put it to rest. Yeah. Peace out.
Well, first of all, thank you very much. It's very good time.
You're welcome.
And I just wanted to go ahead and comment a little bit about this idea of privilege, because it reminded me that sometimes, especially in the past, I've had this value that, the difficulty of making that choice and realizing all the people who can't make that choice, poor people, even in our own country, can't sometimes afford to make the choice of choosing organic food. And so sometimes I have felt like it was sort of not right for me to eat better than people who couldn't afford it. I mean, it's just a thought. And part of the roots of that for me were... when I was in a Catholic monastery, they didn't eat meat. And I asked them why they didn't eat meat. I didn't really care if they didn't eat meat, but I was just curious about what the basis for this was. And of course, it wasn't for healthy reasons or anything like that. It was because originally in the 15th century, they about meat because, well, they probably couldn't afford to eat it, but because no, the poor could not afford meat. And the order was the poor clerics, and their primary mission was to identify and live like the poor. And so not having anything more than you need, and not even better than other people. And at that time, only the rich could afford to cook. So it was for that reason that for all these hundreds of years that they didn't eat meat. And anyway, I had, it was just a new thought to me. I mean, there are a lot of reasons for not eating meat. But that one, and of course that's not as relevant in our culture now, but still the value that they held of, they still had healthy meals, but the value of not eating sort of, you know, or any, well, possessing things or living better than, but even in this area of food, not eating food that's more expensive than the food in the forest, which is an important value that I embrace. Now I'm consistent about it, but it's just, it's a thought.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you, yeah. I know when I'm choosing organically grown food, or a big issue is locally grown or raised sustainably, it's there are a lot of issues there. And one of my ways of thinking about it is, I believe that organically grown products are better for the earth. So it's my contribution to the health of the planet. And if things aren't trucked, it's better for the atmosphere. So it's my contribution to the atmosphere. Because sometimes I don't have the wherewithal to give money to different organizations that are working on that. But my daily life, how I spend my $2, you know, is my contribution. Who do I want to give it to? And in our little town in Belfast, we've worked so hard to keep the big box stores out. And we've been fairly successful. We're a little town of 6,000. You know, that's like this room, right? And we have a beautiful little two blocks this way, two blocks this way, downtown, and a harbor on the Penobscot Bay, which opens into the Gulf of Maine, which opens into the Atlantic Ocean. So it's a precious jewel, just a precious jewel. So we have really, you know, worked hard to keep that away so that we can support those little stores, all owned by local families who all give to the school system, who all, you know, it's such a thing. And in a bigger city, I think it's much harder to have that access of seeing how things directly affect things. So who I give my $2 to, what we say is, if you want a store to be there, that's the one you give your $2 to. You know, that's the one you shop in. So that's, you know, some of the in my mind. Yes.
I just think the discussion, just the thought popped into my head that, you know, any time, you know, your comments about, you know, the label, and any time we attach, you know, ourselves to the way things should be, other than how they are. I know sometimes I just sort of hear that in that whole discussion, like, it's just, I don't know, like, any sort of the intention behind eating organic or, you know, sustainable farming, whatever it is, it's much more important, I think, than, I don't know, does that make any sense?
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, well, to everybody, yeah. I mean, it does.
Yes, I believe intention is pretty primary.
Yeah.
Focus is pretty primary. And then you deal with whatever circumstances you have.
Yeah.
That you're dealing with.
I think there can be a tendency to get sort of, well, there's a self-righteousness embedded sometimes.
Sometimes.
Not always.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that's a second arrow we can.
Yeah.
Or I should be able to do this. I should. That's extra. That's all extra. Yeah. So just let that calm down and float away. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, I mean, I try to eat locally and this and that, but the thought occurred to me is, what about those farmers in Haiti that are growing bananas?
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose not to eat bananas, what happens to those people? Or, you know.
Good question. Yeah. Yes, it's big. It's big. Yes, it's big. And it's heart work. And we make different choices at different times.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.